the Super Garbage Day, a retro video game review show where my co-host and I play a game 20 years or older that you, the listener, chooses. Every episode, we randomly pick a game submitted by the community to play, kindly dissect, then discuss. Welcome to episode 55. I am your host, Mio Ross, and with me today is my co-host...
Vanferno, retro boomer gamer extraordinaire. Hey man, I remember I told you last time we recorded that I was gonna find a better moniker than boomer, but then I was doing some serious soul searching here, man. My first console was an Atari 2600. You remember what that thing looked like? It literally looked like it was made out of wood.
It had wood paneling.
It looked like a 1970s station wagon, man. So you can't unsee stuff like that. So I'm going to stick with, boomer.
Oh, well, you can call yourself whatever you like. It's okay. We're not going to judge you. But it is episode 55. We are apparently continuing our survival horror fest in March. But before we get to that, let's talk about what's new in the land of Super Garbage Day Incorporated. The YouTube channel is doing really well. More videos have dropped. More videos are to come. Right now, kind of a major focus on the Xbox 360 with a little bit of retro shopping out there at thrift stores and stuff. Also, speaking of retro stuff, I tried to pick up the new hobby of restoring old video game consoles and current ones. So I attempted to fix my son's Nintendo Switch Lite, put a new battery in it, and I pulled it off. I was successful, but then I also at the same time broke it to the point where the top button for power and sound doesn't work, but you can still do that within the menus. He was kind of pissed off, but I did notice when it was done, I was testing it with Mario Kart 8. I have not played Mario Kart 8. This first time I'm playing it, and I'm like, oh no, I have messed up all the buttons, because I'm like, it's going by itself, it's doing all this stuff. And then I realized later, I heard on another podcast that it adapts to whatever easy or 500cc or whatever difficulty you put it on. It has like auto accelerate and like does these things. So I was like, oh, okay, never mind. I didn't break the whole thing, just the power and volume button at the top. So that, to me, that's a win. My son's still pissed, but that's how it is. So have you ever fixed or attempted to fix a console on your own?
No, but I had the perk that my father was an electrical engineer.
Oh, God, so yeah.
So his hobby was, it still is to this day, just tinkering with electronics. He fixes broken washing machines and, you know, dishwashers, refrigerators, all that stuff. So if something was just kind of messed up, he will... break it down, fix it. You know, if something like needed welding or anything, he will take care of it. So I never actually had to do any of that. He will just do it for me. So I was lucky.
He sounds like a landlord's best friend. He would be a good landlord. So.
Oh, debatable, but.
Well, all I know is that he's an electrician. So also. I know that in the past couple episodes, I spoke about how I've been having, I've been getting sick. I have chronic tonsillitis, and it's been driving me nuts this year. It's never been worse. I had to go to the urgent care 3 times to pick up antibiotics and steroids. And as of yesterday, I talked to my doctor. First off, they gave me the shot, which I get every year for allergies, which is primo. I'm not a doctor. I don't know how your health is, but I cannot recommend you get an allergy shot more, because it's just like you're cool for the rest of the season. They also are setting me up to get my tonsils removed this year, so oh my god, I don't have to worry about that problem ever again. So I don't know, this has nothing to do with retro games, but it does have to do with the show's production, so it kind of makes sense to talk about it. But I'm very happy that I'm getting these stupid tonsils out of my throat, and they're never going to stop me from making content again. Just the tonsils, though. I don't know. I can't speak on the other parts of my body.
That's weird, man. One day you're just going to be doing episodes with less body parts. It's just kind of...
Maybe. I'm hoping I come out of it with like a really deep British accent or something and be like, oh, this is how I talk? I didn't know that. Anyways, check out the Super Garbage Day YouTube channel, as I spoke about, and occasional streaming on the Super Garbage Day Twitch or on the retro stream via Vanferno's YouTube, which is way higher quality and generally probably more faithful to time than I am when it comes to streaming. And the links for everything I just talked about so far are in the show notes. So now it is time to talk about the retro question of the week. All right, so Zodiac, Mr. Chris Cropline, woof, I'm leaving it in, asks, why is the shooter, as in shmup, genre so niche in the modern era? Why aren't the great shmups of old held in the same regard as many of their contemporaries? Van Fernal, what do you think?
Huh. So, I could argue that they are played more now, like now than ever. The thing is, I don't think the problem is the shmup itself. I think just the arcade style game as a whole, it's just, it is, for at least for consoles, Steam, that kind of thing, it's just not a viable investment for a company, you know. It is obviously it is a niche. The production for it, like how much is a console player willing to pay for a shoot 'em up, which is an arcade style experience? You're gonna play it once probably and never touch it again. With that said, for example, right now you can go, this is just the Google store, I don't know the Apple store's numbers, there's a version of 1945, you know, the 1940s is Capcom's shoot 'em up series, the ones that are based on World War II. Right now there is a 1945 game in Google, and in the Google store, it has 100 million downloads. With a 4.8 star rating out of 5. So, tell me the last time one of those shoot 'em ups in their prime had that many players. You know, a lot of people might not play this like constantly, but it also has microtransactions. It's the freemium type. Like, so if only 10% of those people spend $1 in that game, that's $10 million. So I don't think it's so much that the shoot 'em up is dead. It's just that this type of casual game just shifted to more to a mobile tablet type of market.
I'm very surprised to hear that. I wouldn't think that 1945 would garner that big of a crowd in the current generation of technology. So you make a great point. It's perfectly built because it originates on arcades. So therefore it kind of works well in a mobile device to play here and there and not really invest. I don't know. Here's the thing though. I'm not a shoot 'em up guy. I don't really have an answer. I like 3 shoot 'em up games total. And those games are all old school ones, and I hold them in high regard. So I'm a person that thinks, like, I don't even know of any new shoot 'em ups. I don't think I've played a new shoot 'em up other than this game Freedom Finger, but that was only because Aesop Rock was on it. So I don't really have an answer other than I'm on the other camp where I like the older ones, and I still visit them sometimes. Three specifically, but yeah, you make the greatest point there.
Yeah, and most of the time when you see the old school shoot 'em ups, it's some sort of compilation, Raiden project or Gradius compilation, you know, that type of thing, which is aimed towards the nostalgia market. But I just don't see the companies have that much incentive to invest in making new shoot 'em ups, because honestly, the whole pick up and play aspect of it and how casual they are, it's, I don't think the average console gamer, PC gamer, when they sit down and say, hey, I have 2 hours, I'm just gonna like play a game right now, they're gonna play something, so pick up and play type thing, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and also I think it's much more of a Japanese market than it is an American market. So, because I know they love that genre. That genre has been strong forever.
Yeah, but the ones they get over there, like those bullet hell shoot 'em ups, they're ridiculous, like absurd. Maybe
that's the answer right there. Is that when the shoot 'em up became the bullet hell shoot 'em up, that's when it changed into almost a different subgenre, and perhaps that's why they're regarded higher than their contemporaries.
It is very intimidating just seeing like literally like tens of thousands of bullets like on screen at once, and you have to be perfect or just like die with one shot.
Yeah, that stuff is nuts, man. I don't it's cool though. It's impressive to me. But I think that's, like I said, that might just be a localization thing where I see that and I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to touch that. But like, across the sea, they're like, yeah, that looks great. And I love that. But then again, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not the biggest fan of the genre, but I do appreciate it and respect it. So, you know, I couldn't give a more crappier answer. So my apologies, Mr. Coplane, but that's what we think.
Yeah, so, well, you're welcome for our very uninformed opinions. You asked us, that's what you're going to get.
That's what I'm here for. So, all right. So I'm really excited about this. Let me give a background on this. We're going to play a game show here, a little bit inspired by our friend Mick Keith from the defunct Main Quest podcast, Codpast.
Rest in peace.
Yes. So he'd always like to do little game shows when people would come on. And I think you and I both fell victim to having to endure them, and I did terrible. I don't know how you did, and I shouldn't have said fell victim. It was really fun.
I did surprisingly well.
There you go. Well, I didn't do so well, but it reminded me of a day in my past when I used to host bingo at a bar.
Bingo. That, like, not a cool like trivia show or like, you know, like audio trivia, guess that you're bingo.
I don't trust myself to like do a trivia show that will be the easiest trivia show ever. Like, I'm not, but hey, let's see with this. So the whole backstory here is that I worked at a barcade for a long time. Level Up, shout out Eugene, Oregon, one of the best bars, still there. Love that place. I hosted their bingo, also was bartending, so it was like something I did on the side for extra money. But I hosted bingo, and I wanted to make it more like a game show because I'm more of like an entertainer than I am like a person who thinks that I don't think I'm a highly intelligent person, but I'm definitely an entertainer. I'm a theater kid. And so I put together this bingo show where like whoever won, they come up and they spin a wheel. I always had spinning wheels in everything I ever made. And then they had to play a game. And if they won the game, they get to pick from like this table of prizes. Everything that I got from a thrift store, by the way. So it was all because it was free. Bingo was free. So it wasn't whatever. But I had this one game in particular. It was a big hit. And I decided to bring the game to the show. And you're going to be the first person. And the game is called Man of Culture. So let me explain the game to you, Van.
Explain away, kind sir.
I will present to you five quotes in no particular order, and you must decide if the quote comes from a Drake lyric or from literature. No Googling, okay? And if you win, you get the prestigious title of Super Garbage Day's Man of Culture. And that, my friend, is something you can put on a resume.
Wait. First of all, you said it comes from literature or a lurker? What was that first word? I'm already failing at the culture thing here.
Okay, so it's either a quote from a Drake song, Grammy award-winning rapper Drake. It's either a lyric from one of his songs, or it is a line from literature.
Oh, wow.
From a book.
This is going to go well.
And I made sure that to pick quotes from either side that rhyme or one half of the rhyme, so to make it a little more difficult. Are you ready to play this?
No, but let's do it.
All right. First question. First quote. If wishes were fishes, we'd all cast nets. Is that from Drake or is that from literature?
I really hope it's from Drake.
Is that your final answer?
If wishes were fishes, we'd all have nets.
Yeah.
It does
kind of suck. No Googling. I can see you.
No, I'm not Googling. I'm just thinking here. literal Drake. That's literally a coin flip at this point. Oh, I'm going with Drake. Final answer.
All right. You are wrong. That is Frank Herbert from the book Dune in theaters. Everywhere. Huh.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. Quote number two.
But Dune's all like sand. There's not even water there. Like, what's with the fishes, man?
Well, here's the thing is I didn't write the book. So you have to take that with Frank Herbert.
All right,
the writer of Dune.
I'm on to you.
All right, second quote. I live for the nights that I can't remember with the people that I won't forget.
So, loss of probability. This one has to be Drake. Because, you know, there's no fishes in... Okay, I'm going with Drake, final answer.
Okay, and it is actually Drake. You got a point.
Yeah.
There we go. So you're 1-1 right now. Here we go. Third quote. Everyone who has doubted me is asking for forgiveness. And if you ain't been a part of this, at least you've got to witness.
Yeah, that sounds like a rap lyric, man. They're always I'm going with Drake with this one.
Final answer, Drake?
Yes, final answer, Drake.
And it is Drake. Wow. Okay, you're better at this than you thought.
Yeah, I'm great at 50-50 guesses.
Yes, you are, man. Probably you're 50% of the best at that. So, all right, here we go. Quote number 4. A friend is like an owl, both beautiful and wise. Or perhaps a friend is like a ghost whose spirit never dies.
I'm going with literature. Final answer.
And that quote comes from Emma Guest from the book Forever.
Yeah, I remember that book from when I never read it.
Also, that's wrong. Forever is the name of the song on the last quote, but it is from book by written by Emma Guest. So this is going swimmingly. It's professionalism at its highest caliber. All right, so you are 3-1. You're setting the stage.
Let's go for the 80% here.
Okay, here we go. Last quote. Life without pretending, love without depending, listen without defending, and speak without offending.
I don't know, man. It's kind of hard for me.
You want to hear it again?
No. I'm just saying, like, I don't want to sound like horrible, but like, it kind of sounds weird for me to a rapper to talk about speaking without offending me, because these guys are always like trying to doing diss tracks and that kind of thing. So I'm gonna go with literature with this one, man. It's like it's kind of counterintuitive for what the average like rap lyric goes like. So yeah, I'm going with literature. Final answer.
Okay, it was Drake. So
damn it, Drake.
Your final score is 3-2. So you are officially, as of right now, until somebody else beats that score, you are officially the Super Garbage Day Man of Culture. You get to put that on your resume until another person beats your score. How do you feel about that?
I feel awesome. That was, you know, I feel culture already, you know.
Good. And you get to hold on to that until I play that game again with somebody else. So probably won't be a weekly thing, but I think I'll pop that in whenever I have a guest, or we have a guest or something like that. Cause I loved the Man of Culture or Woman of Culture. I hope we have or Person of Culture, you know, depending moving forward.
Yeah. Keep it PC, man.
Gotta keep it PC. All right, man. Well, it's time to ask. What are you playing? So what are you playing, Van Vernal? What you been up to this week with your video game?
So right now, most of my spare time, I'm playing a lot of Tekken 8.
That's right. Every time I see you're on Discord, it's like Van Vernal is playing Tekken 8. I'm like, yeah, he is.
Oh, man. No, the thing is, like, Tekken has always been my favorite fighting game series, but I pretty much dropped it after Tekken 5. Because Tekken 5, I actually played a lot in the arcades back home. It was crazy. Like, we will hang out and you will put a token to play next, and there'll be 20 tokens before you. Like, we were just like hanging out at the arcades, trash talking and all that kind of stuff. And that's about the time where the arcades really stopped being a thing. And after that, Tekken 6, 7, the online gameplay just wasn't there. So there's no arcades, the online sucks, so I kind of dropped it altogether. But this one has really good netcode, so it actually almost feels like playing the actual arcade cabinet. So it really got me back into it, and I'm having a blast, man. It's great.
That's great, dude. It's good to hear that, because I too remember the days of the quarters on the arcade machine for like Killer Instinct and Mortal Kombat 2 and 3. And like, man, those are, it's cool that something now in the modern era is capturing that, at least a little bit of it. And online, I'm so terrified of playing. First off, I don't own any current gen systems because I'm just broke. But other than a Steam Deck, but I'm terrified of playing online, especially competitive fighting games. I mean, oh my God, hats off to you. I'm glad that Tekken 8 is definitely, you know,
the funny thing is like, I'm starting to see all of my old school friends from the Tekken days popping up on my, on the game. And he's like, hey man, you're still playing Tekken? And we're like talking, this is like 20 years later, you know, type of thing. I'm like, wow. And I'm starting to see these people I hadn't interacted with in years, and they're like all back because of this game. So it's like, it has been a great experience. I do get tilted playing this game, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I get very competitive, but it's been great, man.
That sounds awesome, man. I kind of long for that, but I make up for it with this, with like doing this show and the community we have in the Discord. And if everybody listening, you should join the Discord. It's some of the nicest and coolest people you can come across. Link is in the show notes. So, Van, does that mean that you have a Tekken 8 review coming down the wire at any point? Because it sounds like you should review it.
I can do a pocket review, you know, punch the other guy until he runs out of health, and you win. That's Tekken 8 in a nutshell.
Is that your review or is that your strategy guide?
both. It works. Hit the other guy until he stops moving, and that's it. That's pretty much the Tekken 8 in a nutshell.
Wow, I love it. I love it. It's concise. All right. Well, I think it's that time. Oh, no, it's not, because I got to tell you what I'm playing. I am playing Celeste, which was picked for the Backlog Eternal, the other podcast, under the umbrella of Super Garbage Day. And I am almost 4 hours into it. And I definitely am going to finish it. And I don't want to give anything away, but it is definitely a game. And other than that, I'm going to start Prince of Persia on the NES after Celeste, because that was the next game that got voted for me to beat, because Backlog Eternal is the secondary show where whatever gets voted in our community, I put up four games that have a theme of some sort, and the community in Discord votes, and then I have to beat it. I'm forced to beat it. So Prince of Persia on the NES is next. And I'm going to be honest, I'm kind of nervous, because I'm a man who likes difficult games. Of this year, 2024 has been no slouch on Backlog Eternal choices, because the first game was Dark Souls. And then it's Celeste. And Celeste is difficult. And then it's going to be Prince of Persia. So it's like, I don't know. The next category is going to be like games for children or something, but
no. And the thing with Prince of Persia is, it has a 1 hour time limit.
Yeah, so I know.
If you don't beat the game in 1 hour, you got to start from the beginning.
You're forced to speedrun. That's crazy.
Yeah. So it is a lot of trial and error, and it's a lot of fun. I don't remember playing the NES version, so I don't know how accurate and how good it controls, but it, every version I play of that game is a lot of fun, but it's gonna be you're gonna have fun with it, man.
I kind of look forward to reviewing it and beating it and seeing how I feel about it, because it's a game that I played off and on like my whole life, but I've only played in like 20 minute bursts. And I do own it. Like, I have the physical copy, so it's cool. I'm that's something else I'm really happy about. It's like, so far with Backlog Eternal as well as like all the games I've played, I own the copies of, so that's a part of it too. I don't know. It gives me some enthusiasm to get through it. Plus, I have to. I can't get to the next game until I do. So look forward to that. And that is all of our funny 20. So let's get into the game. And this week's game was, and I keep saying weeks, but we're not doing weeks. We just release the episodes when we finish or have enough to say about the game. Anyways, I'm over explaining and I'm probably not keeping that in the episode. So this episode's game is Fatal Frame 2 Crimson Butterfly on the PlayStation Deuce.
Yeah!
Fatal Frame 2 Crimson Butterfly is a Japanese survival horror game developed and published by Tecmo in 2003 for the PlayStation 2. I've played a lot of Tecmo games since I started this venture into podcasting, by the way. I probably played more Tecmo games than, I'll have to look back on that. But anyways, I digress. It is the second installment in the Fatal Frame series and features an independent story with little relation to the first title. The story follows twin sisters Mio and Mayu, a Kamusakura, as they explore an abandoned village and experience encounters with the paranormal. Their lives quickly become threatened when the village spirits begin to possess Mayu and target them as sacrifices for an ancient ritual. Players must use a camera with powers of exorcism to defeat enemies and uncover the secrets of the village. Let's talk about our first impressions. The song is from Time Lord, 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 Lord. All right, Van, first impressions. You streamed this on your channel. What did you think up front?
So I have to make a little disclaimer first. The thing is, the last game we talked about in the show was Siren, which is a game that was released the same year for the same system with very similar aesthetic. It's the same genre, and the stories are very, very similar. So there will be comparisons with Siren probably a lot. So it just because how, you know, we reviewed them both back to back, and there's a lot of similarities. With that said,
wait one second. I want to say thank you for that disclaimer, because I actually forgot to put that in, and that is very true, and it's all Kenshiro's fault. Continue, my friend.
Thanks, Kenshiro. So my first impression, again, I'm gonna have a little of Siren bias because of how we played the other game. You know, when we talk about Siren, the first time you control your character, you're being chased by a cop, it's raining, there's like sirens in the background, there's all this bombastic like stuff just going on. And then when you finally, you know, it's the game, I kind of found it like the title screen, the music does not match the vibe. It was kind of like it sounded very JRPG-ish, but you start with a cutscene and all this kind of stuff, and then when you finally control your character, it's a screen, you know? Everything looks gray, you're in a forest, your character looks very lifeless. It has this that was very common for Tecmo during the time. If you played Dead or Alive, you know, you have these characters that kind of look like dolls. They just have these blank expressions on their face. And you're like, okay, so I'll start moving around with the slowest running, like girl ever. It didn't give me a very, what's the word I'm looking for? Memorable first impression, when you start moving the character. So out of the gate, it does feel a lot. I found the gameplay, it's a lot like an old school Resident Evil game. The camera angles, the way you move, it's like almost one for one old school Resident Evil. So it does hit those very familiar survival horror tropes of old. But overall, at first you can tell, you know, there was production value into this. And after I got used to that kind of like, difference between Siren and this game, and started, you know, liking it for what it is, then I kind of started getting in the groove of it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. My first impression, we just played Siren. That was the last episode. So immediately I'm like, okay, we're going back into this genre, the subgenre, I should say. But I played the first game. I owned the first game back in the day, and I remember like really liking it. And it feels and looks, this game, Siren. Oh my god, you know how many times I'm probably gonna call this game Siren because of this, but this game, part two, looks and feels like a giant jump in quality and spookiness. And then it's the game before it, and it's a very modern Japanese horror style, you know, especially around this time period when things like Ju-on and the Ring were kind of coming into popularity. So I immediately see why this was a trend and why these games came out in close proximity to each other. However, you know, playing the first part of it, I was like very confused. It's very obtuse from the get-go in regards to storyline. However, my first opinion between this game and Siren was different because they both, this game definitely leaned more into the classic style of, say, Resident Evil, say, Silent Hill, whereas Siren was kind of trying to be more novel and almost become, oh my God, what's the word I'm looking for? Like progress the genre in a direction, which makes sense because the developer Siren made Silent Hill, so he didn't want to make the same game. But that was kind of my first impression, and I was here for it because I am an old school survival horror fan, and I have the patience to sit through the old type and the old ways of this, the what they did with the camera, what they did with the exploration. But by the way, you have a run button. You know that, right? Like from the get-go?
If you call that a run, I call it like a brisk, like jug.
Well, it's true. It's fair. And there's a lot of ground to traverse immediately. So, well, let's jump right into gameplay. So you play as Mio and sometimes her sister Mayu, and these twin sisters have come across an abandoned village with a ritual taking place, very similar to Siren, where a youngster comes across a ritual taking place. And like I said before, this leans more into the classic survival horror type of controls, visuals, camera work. It's way more linear, I feel, than Siren was. And I like I said, like you said, we're going to be doing a lot of comparisons because it's so recent. But this game is chapter based, so it's the linearity kind of, to me, I felt works because it's trying to tell a story more than it's trying to be this really intense survival experience. And I think it guides well. You know, I think that though it points you, at no point was I kind of lost. When I started feeling I was confused, something would happen in the game, whether it be a cutscene or something happening graphically that kind of nudged me the direction I'm supposed to go. And I appreciate that because that's what it's like Silent Hill and Silent Hill 2 did that. So how did you feel about that initial experience? Because it sounds to me like you weren't quite a fan.
I don't want to sound like I went in just like with a bad, like, you know, predisposition to the game. It's not that, but it does feel that this game, I feel it played very safe. It went with a if it ain't broke type of attitude. It plays a lot like Code Veronica in terms of, you know, you have your camera angles, and then sometimes they will move a little. That presentation, I felt a lot like Resident Evil Code Veronica. And if first thing I did is I turned on tank controls because I like tank controls personally for games with camera angles. So after I did that, it felt very familiar. It just felt like I was playing a Resident Evil game set in a Japanese, like, old-timey setting
and rural village.
So rural, like Siren, you know. But it actually, once I started getting into it and exploring the houses and everything, it just, something just kind of clicked, and this nostalgia for old school Resident Evil kicked in, and I was all for it at that point. And it's very interesting how there's little details in the gameplay that I loved because I think they were genius. For example, you know how sometimes you will hop from the... it's kind of hard to explain what happens, but you will hop from one sister to the other, from Mio to Mayu. Mm-hmm. And since they're identical twins, they did this little thing to distinguish them because one big thing from a flashback is that, you know, Mayu fell down and she broke her leg. And one of them runs with a limp. So sometimes the camera will shift from one sister to the other, and it's kind of like a flashback looking thing. But when you see she's limping, you actually, okay, so I'm actually from the point of view from the other sister, like right away. I think that was a little detail that was very interesting. But the story itself is very disjointed. You're kind of piecing together what's going on with the present and the past. And this still falls into gameplay because it just... it's kind of hard to describe. You're exploring typical survival horror style, and then you get these little nuggets of story that will jump from past to present to flashback and that kind of thing. So it can get a little obtuse at times.
Yeah, but also the big part about Fatal Frame, I think, is the fact that it revolves around your weapon, quote unquote, which is the camera obscura, which is there's no weapons in the game other than you have a camera that has the ability to see ghosts, and then pretty much if you capture their image, it attacks them and you can take their spirit, exorcise them pretty much. And I think that's cool. The storyline is kind of built around, you figure out through these little snippets and things that are happening that somebody left this camera here in this village and was put in almost the same situation you're in. And I do know that it does initially kind of jump around a little too much, but it starts piecing it together more and more. And it keeps this over, this main story arc of there's a ritual and you are in a lost forbidden village. And there's a lot of exploration that happens before you even come across that camera. But once you have it, it kind of changes everything. And then it jumps like kind of head first into being survival horror where you can't attack. And I loved it. I love that idea. I think it's such a novel idea. And it also, you know, you go into a first person mode when you use the camera, you're forced to. And it's kind of like, it's nerve wracking because you have to let the spirits get close and most of the time and clear and almost attack you in order to just capture them, to attack them. And I feel like, so the idea, the storyline is, you're finding all these pieces of notes and you're finding images and you're looking back on things in the past. And I think it blends into the idea, like the whole thing is about this camera and this ritual. And so to me, like, I kind of like the disjointedness of it initially and then like figuring more and more out as I went. But once the camera's incorporated into the storyline, it changes the whole thing, I think, from just being like, you're just like watching flashbacks and running around confused into boom, now we're in survival horror and now you can die.
Yeah, there's the combat in theory. It sounded great at first, but after a while, I kind of started hating it. The fact that I feel like this game really likes to waste your time. Because you get in a fight, it's not like you can just keep shooting at the enemy and kill it. You know, you have to pick your shot and the you will do more damage when the enemy is about to attack you. So you have to keep focusing on the enemy, then wait for that last minute to actually get the shot. And if you mess up, you get hit. So I understand what they were going for, and it does build tension and everything. But after a while, I just wanted to get a fight over with. And I'm like, okay, let me wait for this ghost that's somewhere behind a wall. It's not even in front of me to decide to pop out. Now it's in front of me, and I have to wait last minute to get a shot. And I missed the shot, and then it hit me, and then it went back to the wall. I'm like, oh, man, you know. On theory, it sounds great, but the execution sometimes it just gets a little frustrating.
I will agree that the battles are longer than they should be in most cases, but they do try to freshen it up with these RPG elements of new lenses, different film. You can get these spirit orbs that kind of upgrade your camera, can make things combat go faster, especially later on in the game. I was here for it. Especially because unlike Siren, I can kill the enemies. So the thing that bugged me about Siren is that you never can actually kill the enemies. They you shoot them, you get different weapons, but they still come back eventually, and you got to figure a way around that, making it more of like a puzzle to me. But this game, like, I liked it because sometimes you also can use the camera to look in parts of rooms that when you're in third person, you can't see on that side. You use the camera and look and be like, oh, I can see something over there. So it has dual purposes to me, and I liked it.
Yeah, so the concept of the camera, it's great for example, exploration. Sometimes you will see something weird and take a picture, and then you see there's a spirit there, and then a spirit will pop in front of you. When it's like about that, the horror itself, it's great. When it's kind of like a random battle, you walked into a room and it gets a little... Also, is it me or was the combat like really easy overall? I didn't find myself struggling at all at any point.
For the most part, except for when they introduce like one hit kill bosses that your camera does nothing against.
And no, man, that was a cheap shot. Like I that hated sucked. That.
That made
so
me so
much.
Mad. That's a big. I have a big chip against this game for that because I couldn't figure out the save system, which bugged me. And I got so far and then to get one shot killed, and then everything I just did was practically erased because I didn't save. But oof. I didn't know when and where to save initially. And so I thought that was so cheap to like have this boss fight where I'm like, the first thing you're going to do is pull up your camera and try to capture it. And it does nothing. And then you pull your camera down and it just whaps you and it's game over. And it's like, load your save. And I was like, I didn't know where to save. And then back to title screen, I wasted many hours replaying the first like couple chapters, first three chapters of this game because of that. And I found that to be not cool.
Yeah, that is a pet peeve of mine that, you know, in something like Dark Souls, you find that first mimic, you open the coffin and, you know, it kills you automatically. Like, okay, it's Dark Souls, it's understandable, you know. But I'm not a big fan of cheap shots like this because exact same thing happened to me. You get a boss in front of you and I'm like, okay, use the camera. It lets you focus the camera as if it's going to be effective like any other battle. So you're like, yep. Okay, so I'm taking my shot. I got to let this thing get as close as possible to do the most damage. You take the shot and then it's like, oh, the camera is not effective. And since you actually let it get close to get the best shot, it one shots you. And that's actually the only time I died in this game. And it was a cheap shot. So I'm like, come on, man, this was completely unnecessary.
It's weird balance, right? Between and its difficulty to be able to like run around because it's very generous with health items, and you have a fairly large health bar. But that I thought that was like, what are you doing here with that? But you know, ultimately the gameplay is it's survival horror. You have a camera as your weapon. You use the camera to exercise demons, and then you ultimately are collecting a lot of keys. So, but these are classic Resident Evil style solving minor puzzles and trying to unlock a lot of doors to progress the storyline, but a lot more in-depth lore as far as the storyline than say Resident Evil. The story I think is pretty cool and freaky and freaked me out, but ultimately that's just what this game is. There's no better way to describe it. That's what you're doing. You're just traversing this village and trying to figure out, piece together what the hell's going on and your involvement in it. And also most of the time kind of looking for your sister who, like you said earlier, you do get to play as in these weird moments where you're seeing it from her perspective and she seems like she's possessed and you're seeing this so that you know where to go next, which is a part of the game's, I think, well, it guides you well. And I think the pacing is good for that. And then you come across other characters that are weird. And because I had to emulate this game because it's like $100, it had choppy audio and I was like, oh man, it was an emulation issue, so I can't hold that against the game. But I mean, that's really in a nutshell what the game is. It's Resident Evil, or I would say it's more Silent Hill than Resident Evil, but with a camera instead of a weapon, and it's just like drenched in that folklore ghost Japanese that was in vogue in that time period of the early 2000s. And I think for the most part, it pulls it off in the gameplay, but it does drag a little bit. And there's a lot of running back and forth that to some people would get old. And I can understand that. And some people just like that in their games. If they know what they're coming into, then that's what you get. It's, if you expected that, you're getting that 100%.
The thing is with the backtracking, one of the issues I had is that I don't think for the most part, the ghosts don't really respawn. So you kill a ghost, that corridor is pretty much clear. But this game, the objectives in Resident Evil, they're more varied. The different items you have, sometimes they're for a puzzle where you need to put this here and all that. Over in this game, mostly it's just you find a key to unlock something else, which is not the most interesting thing. You will run into the occasional puzzle type thing. But I feel like the progression was kind of gated in a way that you will run into a lock. You have to do some backtracking, get a key somewhere, probably by killing a ghost, and then you will find the key on the floor and then just keep moving. So in itself, the exploration aspect of it wasn't the most in-depth. But pretty much, in a nutshell, this game is very traditional, familiar, cookie-cutter survival horror with combat being a little different. But overall, if you like the old-school Resident Evil, Silent Hill-like games for PS1 and you know, Dreamcast, that kind of thing, you'll feel right at home.
Especially Code Veronica. Well, let's put a lid on the gameplay and let's talk about the graphics and audio. So I was very, very impressed with the atmosphere this game achieves visually and especially with its sound design. It's so atmospheric. The sound design, in my eyes, is some of the best in survival horror, at least for, I'm going to just say, in all survival horror. What it does with its its droning music, with its, I mean, it's definitely a headphones game. And it also really incorporates the tactileness of the vibration in so many ways with your controller. And it's really like, this game should be played in the dark with headphones on to gain its full, garner the most pleasure from the game if you're into survival horror, because I loved its sound design and way better voice acting than Siren, because you can switch to Japanese voices, but the English dub is done really well with good voice acting. I think it's definitely Japanese voice dubbing cheesiness when you hear the English, but I thought it was fantastic. The screaming, the everything in it, when you first experience ghosts, it's pretty terrifying. I did jump a couple times. The cinematography of the camera, I love. I know that you weren't a big fan of that, but I'm a big like camera cinematographer buff. Like I obsess over movies that just do Dutch angles and all this stuff. And I just love when you'd be running and then it switches from an overhead view and it's showing between, you know, like maybe window panes if you go and buy. And I was just like, I love this. This is hitting all of my artsy hipster check marks of visuals and sound. And the setting like owes to that. It perfectly meshes together. I know it's kind of grainy and it looks kind of like, obviously it's a PS2 game, but they even incorporate the graininess of how it looks, and then it clears up a little bit, and then I realized it was part of the mechanic. Like, it's telling you things. And the visuals and sound are almost a part of your controller, or of you controlling in the game, and you have to pay attention to it. I absolutely loved it. But I want to know what you think about it.
Definitely, the presentation was the strongest suit in this game, because it's very stylized. It's very clean looking, and they were clearly going for an aesthetic, and they nailed it. You know, it was that decrepit, abandoned town type feeling. And I do love, again, I'm going to make the Siren comparison, but the approach was so different in both games. But at the same time, it's a similar setting. You know, it's this rural town where a weird ritual went on in the past by some occult religion, you know, and it to appease some kind of deity. And then a calamity befell the place, which on both of them, it's almost identical. But here it is. There is such a feeling of isolation in this world. You're always alone, except you're never alone, because there's always spirits around, you know. And one of the best part about the graphics and presentation and all that, it's just when creepy stuff just happens. It can be the most random thing. You're walking down a hall and then you see the ghost of a little kid just walk in front of you. And you're like, oh my God, you know. They did it so well. And also, it's this game, it makes you wonder exactly when it takes place, because it does have this monochrome sepia tone to it, so you don't know if you got dragged to the past and that's where things are going, or if it's some kind of limbo in time, or the old school village, the abandoned village, came to the present. So I think this game, they did a great job of just making everything feel like this really weird dream atmosphere, where just the world of the living and the dead are kind of brought together.
Absolutely. And and it owes really well to it being a linear game too. It's ultimately just trying to tell a story, and it does it really well, at least visually and audibly. And it was funny, Julia brought this up. She was watching me play, and she like appreciated that the female characters weren't like over sexualized. She was like, they kind of give me a little bit of like an Alice in Wonderland vibe. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I didn't think about that. I didn't see it from that perspective. So that's, I would take that for what it is, but that's also something to add to it.
Yeah,
but
the thing is, I think they were 14-year-olds too, you know, so they're just girls. So that's probably part of the reason they kept it like not over sexualized or like over the top, that kind of thing. And the audio design also, it incorporates so well into the gameplay, because even when ghosts are hidden in walls and all that, between that and the rumbling, you always have a very good spatial awareness of where a threat is going to come from. And that, I was describing this on when I streamed the game. When you're going by audio to find out where the ghost is, when you're looking in the wrong direction, one of your headphone sides feels kind of muted. It actually bothered me when I was looking in the wrong direction, which nudged me to turn around to make the audio just kind of feel right. And it usually guided me in the right direction. So the sound design was top notch. My only gripe with the sound design, and it's a pet peeve of mine, is that the ambient audio cues, they repeat every single time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you go into a room, the first time you hear like a thunder crack, and you're like, oh my God, you know, you got scared. But then when you're backtracking and go five times to the same room, the same thunder will sound at the exact same spot. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, you know, it after a while, it just becomes very familiar.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the enemies are similar, and they do a lot of the similar groans and all that stuff. And then there's only like a handful of enemies, but just like Siren had the same problem. But I feel like there's a lot of moments of like a crescendoing terror, and all of a sudden you're in a room feeling safe, and then oh, now I'm in like a fight with something that's literally in my face. And I loved how it was able to pull that off without me feeling like it was cheesy and too dated. It's just hats off to the sound designer of this game.
Another thing I have to like criticize about the audio in this game, you know how you get these crystals, which are basically audio logs of the spirits that you find. You can hear some of their thoughts and everything, and they're really creepy. But you know, you hear one of the audio crystals and it's something like, oh, it hurts, or this, you know, it's creepy. It's spirits like complaining. But after I'm hearing like the 10th crystal and it's another spirit just like, you know, bitching about something, I'm like, you know, I'm over it. I'm not going to bother with more crystals, because there's only so many times I can hear like it hurts to be dead, or like, you know,
yeah.
So after a while, I kind of stopped collecting. I kept collecting them, but didn't bother listening, because it got old after a while.
It wore out its welcome, yeah. But yeah, I think it's just for the completionist who really wants to be engrossed in the story. But so yeah, there's graphics and audio. So let's give our verdict. Okay, so at the end of the day, Fatal Frame 2. Crimson Butterfly, Van Fernal, what's your verdict on this?
All right, so this is going to sound very weird, but this game, I feel that it played very safe when it comes to the survival horror formula. It does have its own spin on the combat and that kind of thing, but you played this before. You played Resident Evil, you played the original Silent Hills. And this is a formula that for the time was already becoming pretty stale, which you can tell because a year later Resident Evil 4 came out, so even Capcom recognized that this formula was running out of steam at this point. So this game for me, it's a very solid C in terms of overall. It is in terms of audio and presentation, I think it was top notch, but the gameplay itself, the backtracking and all that, it did get a little stale after a while. And also I feel this game is extremely long. It got the thing is at the end, at the beginning, it's very obtuse what's going on, but you kind of get the gist of what's going on in the story after a while, and it's a pretty clear picture. But it just kept dragging on and on and on. Like, I thought I was about done with the game, and I'm like, I'm in chapter 8, and then I looked it up, and it's 10 chapters, and I'm like, oh my God, you know? So I did feel it kind of dragged on a little, but I will give it a very solid C. And the irony of all this is that I gave Siren a C-, but mostly because of how incredibly frustrating the game is. But with that said, I do respect how Siren pushed the mold of survival horror more, because Siren, they aimed for the moon and they missed in a lot of spots, but it was a very ambitious game. This game, I felt that they played a little too safe when it comes to survival horror.
I think that's respectable. I don't mean to mirror again what you're saying like we did in the last episode, but I too agree that there's a lot of filler here that's unnecessary to kind of, you know, make the game longer. But I absolutely adore the atmosphere in this game, and I think that it's a better atmosphere than Siren. I love that its roots are more planted in classic survival horror with like a little bit of a twist. And I found the camera obscura to be like a novel weapon, and what they did with it from the first game to the second game, they've improved upon it, and I dig the light RPG elements of the game too. Now, the backtracking sucks, the save feature is god-awful, and the one-shot cheapness of some of the bosses are ridiculous, but if you are a fan of survival horror and you want an experience that you might have to put more hours than you want to, I think that Fatal Frame 2 is kind of worth your time. Especially, I would put it up there with other games. Maybe Silent Hill 3, maybe Resident Evil Code Veronica. Not perhaps, you know, their peers that are on the Mount Rushmore of survival horror, but like the B tier. And for that, I give it a B-, ultimately. Yes. This is a B tier good survival horror game.
C plus B-, C+. Let's give it an 80-ish if we had to like put a number, you know. It does get a lot of things right. And it played a little safe. That's pretty much how I see it. But overall, it is a very solid game. You can't go wrong with it.
It's approachable. More approachable, I think, than Siren.
Oh, so definitely. 100%. And this is coming from a Siren fan. It's very hard for me to recommend that one.
Yeah, that's a little more niche and a little more you need to be really into like Japanese horror. But okay, well, it is that time. I'm sending you the link right now.
Oh, I'm spinning this wheel. Okay, let's see.
Spin that wheel!
Oh, Jesus H. Christ.
Well, okay. That's welcoming.
So, this next game we're playing is a side-scrolling action game published by Taito for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Whoa. Side-scrolling. Okay.
It's a game about ninjas that are black and wrathful. We are going to play Wrath of the Black Manta. And you know the worst part is? I'm almost positive I'm the one who submitted this game as a prank.
You submitted this? Oh, that's beautiful. I wish that we were recording this on April 1st. Yes. Wonderful.
So I think I kind of like, you know, I shot myself in the foot with this one, but we are playing Wrath of the Black Manta.
Sorry, little Ralph. You once again are snubbed. Wow. So join us next episode for Wrath of the Black Manta. Is it Manta or Mantra? I don't remember.
It's a Manta, whatever that is.
I don't know what that is either. But join us as we both play it. I can't wait to see you play that. By the way, he's probably more likely going to be playing this, streaming it live on the Retro Stream, Van Fernal's YouTube channel. You can check out a link for that in the show notes. I know this game. I have played it before. I've actually beaten this game, and this is going to be hilarious. So, as that is, I want to thank the patrons. $2 can get you access to over 30 episodes of exclusive content, such as Retro Deep Cuts, Backlog Eternal, no longer, actually, that's in the main feed, but, and special events like Super Garbage Bowl. And we have new episodes on the way eventually when we get around to it, but you also can vote on the Patreon poll, which is where we pull every game for this show from. And by vote, I mean put a game in there. I am fudging the bucket so hard on this. Many thanks to our producer level patron, Ken Shiro, who for once game did not get picked. So, and also at this point has been giving me money for my art for over nearly a decade. Thank you for being such a supporter of the show. And if you got this far in the episode, please consider leaving us a positive review. It helps the show grow its audience. And as usual, I want to give a shout out to shows that I listen to every week. The Sofa King podcast with my best friend, Brent, one of my best friends. Retro Hangover with Chris Copleen. He just had a killer episode I listened to on their Patreon about King of the Games 96. And Keith was on there. It was awesome. And Nostalgia, which is a show where they chronologically go through every single NES game and review them, which is dope. And Tadpog, Tyler and Dave Play Old Games. Please join the Discord. It's free. It's a small community of like-minded weirdos like you and I. And on there, you can vote for games and topics like Backlog Eternal. Everything I just stated is in the show notes. Click that Linktree link and set yourself free. So, Van Fernal, how do you feel about next week's game?
I think I lost all feeling, but
all right.
I'm actually looking forward to it. I haven't played this in a very, very long time, and I'm actually excited to give it a serious try here.
Me as well, and I actually look forward to beating it again because I remember something about the last boss being one of the most ridiculous last bosses in NES history. So. Can't wait to revisit it. It's going to be a blast. I guarantee the listeners that. Well, I am B. Ross, the science boss. This is
Van Fernal, the Fernal of Vans.
There you go. And always, never judge a book by its grammar. Have a super garbage day and cut to B. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for watching with my dad. I just want to say, everybody, guys, bye!
After all, no one has to hatch these days since eating. One's own shell is so depressing. Scouring a liquid rock for those first few bucks. Euthanize the yoke slick horse you might have had, rode in on the stand and wipe the blue bird blood from your eyes.
So the snow spits up, mother's milk out.